Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
Official.
Got it.
All right. Well, welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast, everybody. Thanks for joining us again this week. It's me and my good buddy, Mark. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing well, Joe. How are you?
That's kind of formal. You're like going with the doing well, the proper grammar.
Greetings. Greetings and salutations.
So how's your comic book life going?
Well, I think it's going very interestingly. I've decided to update and catalog all my comics.
Yeah.
Of which there are just under 500 physical comics.
Nice.
And starting to figure out which ones have a high level of sentimental value. And the other ones, I'm trying to just figure out the best way to sell them online. Ooh. So figuring that out. But then, of course, going through all the books that I have. And I'm like, right. I want to keep them all. No. But I'm not. Anyway, I'm going to try to sell some of them and just kind of ease out of that collection. So it's kind of bittersweet.
I can't do it. I can't.
You can't do it. You can't let go.
No, I'm getting killed of how much space they're starting to take up, especially because I've been buying more recently. And I should. That's right.
You're going the other direction.
So as you've gone through your 500 roughly comics, what was your favorite sentimental find? Where you're like, ooh, this is. I'm glad this one's in my collection.
Yeah, I think it's when I was growing up, if I ever had a little bit extra money, I wanted to buy comics that I thought would have collectible value. So I bought some silver aged comics from like the 60s and the 50s. I think that's silver. Or is it copper? I don't remember.
That's gold age, I think.
Gold age, yeah.
I think mid 60s. Yeah.
Yeah. So comics from the 60s. I'll just start there. Nice.
Okay.
And there's a couple of Spider-Man ones and then one Avengers one, like the first appearance of Black Knight, because I thought he was cool. So I have I have that one.
You do? I've been looking for a copy. We got to make a deal offline.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that. You can just go to mycomicbookshop.com, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to do that. So I took a few.
We can swap some stock.
Stock swap. So those are good. But the other ones, actually, we already talked about on previous cast, to be honest. Like Wedding of Mary Jane and Peter Parker.
Yeah.
West Coast Avengers, we talked about.
Yeah.
A bit.
What about I was there for the moment, the witnessing of your Spider-Man autograph session.
And that by far, you're right, is the number one. It's Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 300. Mm-hmm. And you and I took a few books to our first Comic-Con just in case we'd see somebody. And you, bless your heart, Joe, said that guy talking to that guy. And I'm like, what? Like, what are you talking about? He's like, that's Todd McFarlane. And I'm like, and he wasn't there to do autograph. He was just talking to some dude behind the booth and you saw it. And so we went over and I whipped out my Spider-Man 300, which, you know, he did a few Spider-Man things, but this was one of them. And I'm like, will you please sign my Todd McFarlane book?
Yeah.
And he was super nice. And he said he would. And he took a picture and I still have the photo of me. It's like my beady eyes are like super wide. And he took a picture and then the flash, I never forget that, the flash from the camera, because this is pre, you know, smartphone stuff, 2009, right. I think. Everybody turned because they were like, why is this guy? And then they saw that it was him and they started flooding. He signed like two more books and then he's like, I gotta go, guys. Remember that rush, that
the crowd rush? And security is like, this is not an autograph line. This is you're crowd in the hall. This is a fire. There's a fire hazard. Yeah. You got to get out.
Right. So he was gracious enough to sign like, I think, 6 to 8 other ones. And then they kind of dispersed everybody because they knew it was just a mob scene at that point.
I don't even know how I spotted it. It was like this serendipitous moment. And like, I don't even know for sure that I could.
Well, there's hundreds. You're walking by.
But also, so I don't know what Todd McFarlane looks like. I don't know what he looks like. I think at first I saw him like, and it was, I was like, isn't that the doofus who just bought the Mark McGuire card for like too much money?
The Mark McGuire baseball.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like,
I think that's how you recognized him. Cause this is almost kind of like, you know, well, this is definitely pre-social media, really.
Yeah.
Like there's no, you don't just know who people are like you do now. Like you can just recognize faces pretty easily. And you just randomly spotted him, and so the authenticity certificate is the photo
right that you took
of him signing the book.
Your face is my case.
You look like a goblin. And so that's that one I could never sell. Like, that just has too much center. That's a good example. That's okay. The number one on my list.
That's up there. Are you keeping your Secret Wars collection?
I'm not.
Ooh.
I am keeping, however, Secret Wars 8.
Okay.
Which is the first appearance of the black costume. So I'm not selling that one. There's other Secret Wars that they said would sell, but I'm not selling that one, even though they want that one. So that, you're right. It's some early Spider-Man ones. The earliest I have is, I think it's Spider-Man 48, which is the first appearance of Rhino.
Okay. That's
so I have cool. That one. I've got first appearance of Black Knight. And then a couple other Spider-Man ones, but the 300 is top of the list. And then I also have Star Wars number 3, I think, which is introducing the bounty hunters. So it has Boba Fett. And when Jeremy Bullock, who was the actor that played Boba Fett in, not is it Temuera Morrison, I think is his name, not him, in the old comic
movies. Yep.
And he's dead now, but he, when he was alive, he was doing autographs, and I had him sign that book.
That'd be weird for him to be doing autographs after he's
dead. So I've got an autographed original Boba Fett, Jeremy Bullock, Spider-Man, Star Wars number 3. So the two autograph items that I have are the ones that I'll probably never sell, just because they have too much. And technically it's Riley's, because I had him write to Riley, my son. So I've roughly have about 8 of the 500 that I'm like, I could never sell these.
You're doing it, man. I more power.
I know it's hard, Joe, but I did. Yeah. And I'll probably keep more than 8, but I'm just saying, like, there were some non-negotiable, no price is worth these 8.
Right.
I'm just going to try it. I sent 10 in, and I'm just going to do the auction thing that they handle it and do a fee. Yep.
That's awesome.
And it's not for money. It's just more just like declutter, move on.
I know. I bought. We'll wrap up the comic talk in a minute. Yeah. But I bought some. You know, it was at a time where prices were low, I guess during COVID, and like, I had always wanted first appearance of the Vision, Avengers 57, and at the time that was the most I ever paid for a comic. I think I paid like $200 for it.
Whoa!
And somebody was like, you know, they saw it, and they're like, you know, you can actually, because with WandaVision and everything, they're like, you could sell that for like easily $1,200 now. And like, but if I had $1,200, you know what I'd do? Buy a copy of Avengers 57. That's right. How about if I just don't sell it and I have it?
I'd go from a very fine copy to a near mint copy of it. Right. The same thing.
So, well, that's cool. We'll catch up later. You can let me know how your sales went. We'll tag that for
I'm just starting. Podcast. So no, to be determined, we'll have to do it in a future cast, but I just got them sent to them like a week ago. So it's processing.
Other comic book related news is kind of a slow week, so I'm glad you had some news about your own personal collection. The Batman starts tomorrow.
Thank you for the correction, Joe. And I said I was going to see Batman Thursday, like the Ohio State University.
Well, I live in Columbus now. I got a the Batman. How, on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you for the Batman?
6.
Six.
Because I'm more of a Marvel guy, so it's but somebody said, spoiler free review, it was the movie 7 meets Batman.
Okay.
It's pretty dark, and it really goes to his detective roots.
Yep.
And the Batman video games, like the recent ones with I can't remember the name of the Rocksteady, I think, studios.
Yeah, does it. Like Arkham Asylum and Arkham
City. Yeah, Arkham Knight. Yeah, they also really tie into his detective roots. And I love that about Batman.
Yep.
Even though I'm not a DC quote fan, but I mean, it's Batman.
Right. So
I'm really interested to see how they play up his detective roots in the movie. And they don't really dwell on his like origin thing. It's really more about how he's going around and
the whole
idea of, is he better than the people he's putting away and all that kind of stuff.
I hope so. I hope they don't need to recap the origin, because I just read the runtime is like 175 minutes. This is a 3 hour long movie.
It's like 257 or 247 without credits.
Does the Batman need to be 3 hours, do you think?
I don't think so. I can't imagine how you, like, you know, you think the storytelling is like three acts. Is that how it's going to be? Is it going to be one act? Is a whole hour?
Hour? Well, at least they're not recovering who we got. The important questions I had for you about the Batman, knowing that it's 180 minutes, 3 hours long, over under, how many times are you going to have to pee during that movie?
Yeah, I mean, well, since I'm over 40, I have to be, if I don't drink after 2 p.m., I think I'll be good.
Okay.
I'll be dehydrated, but I'll enjoy myself.
When you see movies like this, where do you like to sit? Where's your preferred seating?
Well, on this, it's like the way it's set up, it's like two up, slightly off center to the left.
Okay. Two up, slightly off center to the left.
Like that, two up from the main aisle, like not sitting so your neck is like Elaine Bennis, you know.
Right. Elaine.
Elaine.
You didn't like the Batman? Could it be any longer?
That's right. That's right. Because it sucked.
Why? It's even better the second time. Did they make it long? Con Riddler, give me something I can work with here.
That's right. Are you familiar with Paul Dano? Is he good? Like,
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he's the actor that plays Riddler, I think. So I didn't know if you knew who he was. Okay.
No clue. I'm big time. Got to sit on the aisle because I am going to have to use the bathroom and I don't want to bug people. And the last question about the Batman. I just read today that there's a The Penguin series coming out of the movie. And they said it's like his background and it'll fill in blanks from the, I'm like, you're filling in blanks from a 3 hour long movie in a The Penguin TV series. And they equated it to the story of Scarface.
So, oh, that must be the guy. He looks like the bad guy in the trailers. Is he going to be the Penguin?
I think so. I think he's some kind of gangster in this movie.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So that it's leading up to a TV series about the Penguin.
That's what I read today. Matt Reeves has a TV series in the works on The Penguin. If they spend
45 minutes setting that up, I will be supremely disappointed in the three-hour movie about The Batman.
You didn't realize Batman dies at the end and it's all about The Penguin.
He dies like an hour in.
It's the twist. It's the twist. M. Night Shyamalan's The Batman.
Well, and Zoe Kravitz, I like that. She's Catwoman. And
yeah. It'll be
kind of neat.
All right, yeah. We'll talk about that later too. Last movie question and movie news before we dive into the comic books. What the Sam Hill is going on with Morbius at this point? And you're the Spider-Man guy, so I thought I'd ask you.
So I have completely like checked out of that whole. Is it out?
No.
Did it come out?
No.
Is it coming out?
I don't know. It feels like the Morbius movie is an elaborate prank on Spider-Man fans at this point.
But is it out yet?
I don't know. No, it's what? Like they're going to have Avengers 5 out before the Morbius movie.
Well, somebody I read somewhere, it was like, oh, April now. What the heck is going on?
I don't know. But at this point, you're the Spider-Man fan. Is Morbius even worth paying attention to?
No, this is why I don't even understand. I hate to say that, but I don't even understand. But apparently it's another, there's some Marvel crossovers in it. Again, because it's a Sony movie.
That's a big pass for me. I'm just going to read the recap online. I'll probably watch it sometime when it's free on streaming somewhere and it's too late at night. I have nothing else to watch. Or on a plane. That's my plan for Morbius.
What is it, a plane?
All right. Well, we've gone on a little bit about the comic news. That's what I know. Today, we're here to talk about the X-Men and try and figure out a way to size up what's going on in the X-Men universe. So we're going to take a break. Jeff is going to tell you all what's going on in X-Men number 9, the latest X title to hit the stands. And we will be right back.
You either die a hero or you live long enough to listen to the Casual Comics Cast. X-Men number 9. The Quiet Council of Krakoa. The Great Ring of Arako. The Central Column of Orcus. Three ruling bodies, all about to make vital decisions that will affect their people for years to come. And the X-Men are caught in the crossfire.
That was the recap, or the preview, of X-Men number 4. And there's a lot of words in there that if you haven't read an X-Men comic in a long time, you probably aren't familiar with. Like every one of them.
You said X-Men 4. You mean X-Men 9?
X-Men 9. All right. Okay. Sorry. I'm obsessed because I'm trying to on eBay buy a copy of X-Men 4, which is the first appearance of Scarlet Witch. Now, the first appearance of the Vision, that's like my white whale, is the first appearance of Scarlet Witch. Because do I have to tell you again about Vision and Scarlet Witch?
What?
X-Men 9. But there's like a lot of words in there that when I was reading this preview for the new X-Men book, because it's coming out, I think, this week. It's like, it's everyone. Quiet Council, Krakoa, Great Ring, Arako, Central Column, Orcus. I'm like, how am I supposed to like see that and be like, you know what I should do? Pick up an X-Men book when I haven't read one in 20 years. Do you know anything about what's going on in X-Men now, other than the books we're about to talk about?
I don't. Okay. The last ones that I bought, you know, I was telling you I was cataloging my comics, was AVX, which I think was from like 2015.
AVX, right?
Somewhere around there. Like, so I do not. I have no recent reference point of what's going on with X-Men.
It's intimidating because I go to the comic book store like once a week still, just to walk around, and there's a whole section of X-Men books. And I know that the comic book shop I go to, Laughing Ogre, I love them because they leave out like the last two or three in case you've missed one. But it is like a giant wall and it's just X-Men books. So I pulled up the list of these are all the X-Men books. If you want to read X-Men, this is just what's on sale in March. You would be reading, and I'm going to go through all the titles that I think are related. You would be reading X-Men 9, which came out today. Next week, you would wind up reading, great, I didn't do this very well. There's a Devil's Reign tie-in, which I don't know if that's essential, but then the following week of March 16th, get out your, you know, pocketbook coming up, because you're reading The X Lives of Wolverine, which is the sequel to The X Deaths of Wolverine. You'll be reading Excellent number 2 and X-Men Unlimited Latitude. Then going into the next week, you've got X Deaths of Wolverine number 5. So more X-Men of that. You've got Maestro World War M, which is a tie-in to, you know, World Magneto stuff. Oh no, I'm sorry. That's my bad. That's a Maestro tie-in. And then you go into Immortal X-Men number 1, Marauders number 1, X-Force Annual number 1. There's so many X-Men titles on the shelves now that I'm like, how does anybody keep up with all of this stuff? There's a Sabretooth book. There's a couple of Wolverine books. There's X-Men up the yin yang right now. Inferno is an X-Men tie-in, X-Men Legends, X of Swords. I mean, so I got excited when I was on a website and they're like, hey, this is the new era of X-Men. If you are not reading X-Men, you got to get into it. And they're like, we're going to give you the guide. And they're like, start with House of X number 1 and Powers of X number 1. So that's what we read. But before we dive into those books, like you said, the last X books you bought were like Avengers AVX, which was Avengers versus X-Men. When were you like really reading X-Men a lot? And what were the titles that you were like really into, or the characters? Because back then you're like, X-Men, that's the title, the only one.
Yeah, it was. You know, going through my X-Men, it made me very, you know, nostalgic of one of the storylines when I grew up. And I think it was late 80s, it was called the Marauder story arc.
Oh, so you can explain that to me, because there's a whole title now called Marauders.
Oh, really? Of yes. Course there is. And I'm probably going to get this wrong because I didn't go back and read them recently. But it was the whole standard fair X-Men, because back then it was fairly new, which is mutant kind is treated differently, like they're a more powerful race in terms of powers, but they're viewed as, you know, inferior to Homo sapiens. So you have the Homo superiors who were X-Men, and then the Homo sapiens, and it was just, they were different. So people feared them and treated them differently. In a lot of cases did bad things to them. So a lot like just racism. I mean, that's really the whole point, which is fascinating about how comics can take a 12-year-old like me and turn it into something like, this is wrong. Like, you shouldn't be doing this, treating people just because they look and behave differently. But anyway, going too deep too soon probably. But the point is that's when I first got turned on to them. Is I was a Spider-Man guy, as you know, like you with Scarlet Witch and Vision.
Right.
I was a Spider-Man guy through and through, but I had and I categorize it somewhere, like they're by far the second most comics that I had besides Spider-Man were X-Men. And it was because of the of that whole trope, if you will, around you shouldn't treat people differently. And then, of course, because of that, you have X-Men that have eternal optimism, like Professor X and the traditional X-Men, Cyclops, you know, Storm. Right. And then you have the mutants that Magneto, who are the Brotherhood of Mutants, which are like they're never going to change. So we need to dominate them. And basically, we are their superior. And so we should be, they should be servants of us. And right. instead, it's the other way around. So that's it. But the Marauder series was, and again, I Joe, I'm going to get this wrong, but I think they're just a group of mutant monsters that okay. their job was just to kill and devour X-Men. Okay. So it was all, and they lived in the sewers. So they're like really evil Brotherhood of Mutants is kind of how I would describe it. And so there was this huge fight going on between the, I'll call it the good X-Men. So, you know, Professor X's team. But then there were losses on both sides and it caused, you know, like war, it causes people to do
right.
horrible things. And so that whole series was for me at the time, pretty graphic. And then it made you realize like there's infighting even amongst, you know, they have a, you know, people who are different, they have a culture, they have a way of living and trying to survive. Like they don't need like normal humankind giving them crap because they got right. their own stuff to deal with in their own culture. And so that was really the Marauder series there, is there was a lot of betrayal and murder and all this stuff in the Marauder series back then. And that's when I picked up on it.
Are there any like heroes or villains that were part of that Marauders that like are household names that like I would recognize?
Yeah, so Colossus.
Okay.
You know, Kitty Pryde was found to do really bad things, like, you know, her phase ability. She would, I think one time she took a Marauder and phased him into a wall and left him there. So yeah. really nasty things that you would think of like, wow, I didn't think she would know that she should do that. So Colossus was top. Wolverine, of course. He was always pushing to do all the bad things. Cyclops was in it. Storm was always questioning what to do. So your traditional movie X-Men, I'll call it, Joe, are all in it. So all okay. the traditional ones are represented in the Marauder series.
Okay. Well, fascinating. That's, I'm going to have to go back and, well, you know, I got my list of back issues to read is so long now. We'll see how we get through with this series and see if I need to go back and read any Marauders. But I'm kind of the same. Like I was into the X-Men and they're like sort of halcyon Chris Claremont days. And I kind of kept up with them anytime I could. I have a strong affinity for the characters. I always really loved Nightcrawler. I always like Kitty and Colossus, mm-hmm. you know, the sort of that second wave of X-Men almost like that came out with the Giants, like the new team with Giant Size X-Men number one.
Yeah.
I that was the kind of gang of mutants. I kind of fell out of it with New Mutants, where that was where like even back then I was like, man, now I gotta follow X-Men and New Mutants. That's a lot. That's yeah. a lot. So you know, I'm like, I got some time now. Let me see if I can catch back up with X-Men, because this article got me really like psyched about it, because I keep hearing about it. Like every comic book forum I go to is like, X-Men now is amazing. You got to be keeping up with it. And they made it seem like it's not that hard. And so I sent you like an email. I'm like, what do you think, Mark? Should we read House of X, Powers of X, see if we can get back into it? And you said,
let's do it.
Let's do it. Excelsior.
Excelsior. Make my marble.
Right. So we're going to take a quick break. Jeff is going to give a rundown on the plot of House of X, Powers of X. And then going into this, what was your confidence that you were going to be able to follow what was going on when you did this, Mark? When you undertook
high, this? Confidence was high.
High confidence.
I was like, I think I can figure it out based on my knowledge of X-Men in the past.
All right. So we'll have Jeff explain to everybody the plot of House of X, Powers of X, and when we come back, we'll see were you right.
By the hoary hosts of Hoggoth, you're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. House of X and Powers of X. Face the future and fear the future as everything changes for the X-Men. In House of X, Charles Xavier reveals his master plan for mutant kind. One that will bring mutants out of humankind's shadow and into the light once more. Meanwhile,
Powers of X reveals mutant kind's secret history, changing the way you will look at every X-Men story before and after. But as Xavier sows the seeds of the past, the X-Men's future blossoms into trouble for all of mutantdom. Stories intertwine on an epic scale, reshaping the X-Men's past, present, and future.
The massive saga that is House of X, Powers of X, which was released. The reason that they have to go together is because they were released, I believe, bi-weekly, and they alternated. So it's House of X number one. So when you read them, the reading order is House of X number one, Powers of X number one, House of X number two, Powers of X number two. Don't know why. Whatever. I kind of will see if we get it from where it's going. But so we started with House of X number one. And when you open with the book, I've got it in front of me so we can refer to it. You've got a giant tree and some people crawling out of some goo. And a dude in a tight bodysuit with a giant helmet on. So how long did it take for you to sort of catch on with what was going on in at least the beginning of this story?
I still don't know really what's going on.
Do you know who the dude in the black bodysuit with the giant helmet is at this point?
Yeah, that's Professor X. But it took me a bit to figure that out because I thought that was Scott Summers.
I thought it was Cyclops too. Why are they giving Professor X weird headgear that covers his eyes?
And make him super Scott Summers skinny. Everybody knows Scott Summers is a toothpick.
Right. He's bodysuit man.
And I guess so is Professor X, but I was like,
immediately Professor X is walking around looking like a superhero with a giant helmet with X, you know, giant metallic X on it. I thought it was Scott Summers every time I saw it too, because this is the first time I read it. Just when I would see the cover of the book, I thought, wow, Cyclops has a really weird costume now. But this is Professor X, and I can only assume that that's some kind of mini Cerebro he's got on his head or something. I still don't know. I read House of X and Power.
I'm guessing too, Joe, it's a portable Cerebro.
Right. But there's
which is Cerebro like for it's augments his telepathic abilities. So
right.
He's usually always wearing it.
Usually he's using it to find mutants around the world. Yes. Usually.
Yeah.
He's like Professor X. Like I said,
yeah, so like let me go to Cerebro and power up.
Cerebro.
He's always powered up, apparently, with this helmet.
I guess so. And so it's almost like a Matrix type thing where some people are crawling out of these pods that are goo. And he's like standing over them. He's like, you know, to me, my X-Men. And then it flashes to Colossus's arm, Storm, you know, Iceman. You kind of see them all. And they're like harvesting flowers and planting them all around the globe. And we get to then a bunch of political discussion, right?
Right. But I think the key thing, like you said, you reread it. The key point is the very first panel there that says now.
Now.
Like you read later and you realize there's three distinct, at least, timelines happening that are part of the storytelling. So it's important to know that now is now.
Now, starting now.
Now.
And so this is where it starts to get into Krakoa that I didn't know. I mean, I guess to put it in a nutshell, it's a very dense book. It's not like when I got excited if this is a good time to get back into X-Men, I thought, awesome, I'll pick it up, flip through it, and I'll be like, boom, yeah, X-Men, everybody knows this stuff. It's not. It's like,
right,
buckle up your seatbelt, buddy. It's going to be a wild ride.
Yeah.
And it's interrupted by like book or pages that are just text that you have to read, which I mean, I'm not knocking it because I kind of got into it, but it's not a light read by any means. I thought you and me were going to just, hey, I'm going to whip through these books. I'll pick it up, read them both in a half an hour because I'm usually reading an X-Men comic in 15 minutes. I was more like a half hour at least on each comic because I kept having to flip back and forth to understand this whole world of the X-Men where they're planting these seeds that now act as gateways for them to be able to travel anywhere in the globe. and they're like trying to establish a mutant oasis like here on Earth where humans won't bother them, and they are working the global political system by basically taking some kind of flowers that I don't know where exactly they harvested them from. They were seeds in Krakoa, and they've got three distinct kind of seeds. One gives them a flower that has a gateway that mutants can use to travel between locations, and they use it to get to Krakoa, which is sort of their hidey hole, and no humans can get there. They have one that will produce like a habitat, a housing, and then they have one that winds up, they're able to somehow create these super drugs from these flowers, and one extends human life by 5 years, one is a universal antibiotic for humans, and one cures diseases of the minds in humans. And they're like, basically, rest of humanity, leave us alone, and we'll supply you with these drugs that you need. And it becomes like this really interesting but weird non-X-Men, not what I was expecting, global political conversation about what's going to happen with mutants in the world.
And one was, you can suck it and suck it and suck it, and it never gets any smaller. I'm just kidding.
I can imagine.
It's not a real gobstopper.
You put that helmet on Willy Wonka. And, you
know, Willy Wonka.
You might be there. But I think I don't want to speak for you. It was not easy to follow. I had to reread it several times. What were the pieces like of this when you're reading House of X that you're like, I wasn't exactly sure what was going on here, because I thought we might be able to, if we put our brain power together through context clues, sort of figure it out. House of X number one is literally the setup of the mutants establishing their base on Krakoa and negotiating with the humans to say, listen, we could just destroy all of you, but all we want is to be left alone. And as long as you're leaving us alone and giving us what we want, which is a habitat for mutants, and also it's this amnesty for any crimes that mutants may have committed, and you're going to let them go and they're going to come to Krakoa and live with us here. In exchange for that, then we'll also supply you these drugs we need. And that's, I don't know, is there much more to the House of X number one than that? I mean, there's a ton of action, but that's kind of it in a nutshell. So
you're right, Joe, it is very dense. But after sleeping on it a couple nights, it's actually a lot. The foundation is very much like what I read way back when. It's right. The struggle with, if people treat you differently, like, what do you do? Do you try to collaborate and coexist? Or do you, it's the fight or flight thing.
Right.
It's like, and what Professor X was always trying to do in the other iterations of this is neither. He's like, we just need to work together.
Right.
And now he's in the story, it's a reimagining of a common theme with X-Men is what I've realized more. It's dense, but it's really not that much. I wasn't disappointed, I guess, by the whole reimagining. I was like, wow, this is really interesting. And he's like, I want to actually just remove ourselves from the equation, but not entirely. And right. That's the whole year 100 without. He's like, I'm giving the illusion that we just want amnesty and go away, but I'm giving humankind like gifts, he says.
Right.
Magneto says, is gifts from us to leave us alone. And it's like, and I think one of the humans is like, it's a gift if you don't expect anything in return. It's not a gift.
Right.
Which I think
it's a bribe. But it is, you're right. That's actually interesting, because it's a change in tactics for both him and Magneto, who both appear to be on the same side now. Professor X was always like, live and coexist peacefully and integrate with humans. And Magneto was always like, we're better than them. We should dominate them and run everything. And now they both come together and said, you know what the best thing is we're better than all of them. Let's just make sure that we have our spot. We're going to be away from them because we just can't get along. And right. this is best for everybody. And we've got this bribe to keep them on their side. But there's still this whole thing in humans that are like, but they're stronger than us. And if they change their mind at any time, because now it's almost like exacerbated. It's like now not only do are they more powerful and they could just gang up and destroy us because they're powerful, but now they've also made us reliant on them for this drugs that we need. And now we're even more subservient to them, or we're more because I don't know, it like kind of always the humans always seem like the a-holes. And you kind of have to look for it, though, of there's got to still be, especially when they're talking to these government people, like in the back of their mind, sure, this is the deal now, but they could change their mind anytime and there's nothing we could do about it.
Right.
We're like dependent on their benevolence.
Yes. And before, when I would read X-Men, I mean, there were shades of gray between the X-Men, but if you were generally a good person, you'd read it and you'd be like, why are these people hating on these mutants? Like there's no purpose or reason other than they're different.
Right.
They're just different. And what I didn't understand then is that the hate is around what you just said. It's they're different, but they're really, I want to be like them. Like they have powers. They're more powerful. They could potentially turn on us. And so this storyline that is it Jonathan Hickman, I think, he just leans into that and says, Professor X knows that. So he's just going to lean into it and say, we're basically gods to you. So we're giving you these gifts, like leave us alone. And it, like you said, it just makes matters like exponentially worse.
Well, it doesn't help when Magneto's kind of a dick at the end.
Yes.
Because he takes the government representatives from across the globe to Jerusalem to have this conversation with them. And he's like, it's not lost on me how you humans love your symbolism. And so what you have to accept is you have new gods now. It's like, well, you're not helping, Magneto. Stop.
He's like, and he doesn't even, he says it. He's like, you know who you sound like? And he's like, I do. It's like the emperor. I can feel it. Feel your hate. And he loves it. He's reveling in it because he's like, finally, Charles sees it my way. But Charles, it's a bad take for Charles, but he really thinks he's doing the right thing because again, it gets back to, it's more classic than you think. Magneto sees it and only sees domination. Charles sees it as this is just a way for us to just be happy and live and create our own culture. And it's like, no, you're not
doing any
of that. You're making it worse.
And this is where it gets interesting because we're starting to talk about the deeper themes that are embedded in the book. So let's take a quick break. We'll come right back and we will continue our discussion on House of X, Powers of X.
You're listening to your friendly neighborhood casual comics cast.
All right. Thanks for sticking with us, everybody. We are talking House of X and Powers of X. And Mark, we're just getting into some of the deeper themes embedded in the book here. You can get into this deep, which is why I liked it and why I reread it a couple times, is it gets into that emotion. And that's what Hickman does, is a good job of getting into the, like why do, like I always used to think, it's like, why do mutants and humans, I don't know, why are humans such jerks about it? And it was usually because they're different and they're rabble rousers and whatever. But Hickman gets more into the, there's always emotion behind it. And there's two main emotions that drive. It's like love and fear. And both of those can drive hatred. And the position that the mutants and Charles Xavier and Magneto have taken is almost that Michael Scott middle ground. Do you want them to love you or fear you? Both. I want them to be afraid of how much they love me.
Right.
Yeah. And that's where the end House of X number one, and then Powers of X number one dives right into what you were hinting at, which is now there's three super distinct timelines. There's X0, which is now, X1, which is like 100 years from now, which they call the 100-year war. And then there's X2, which is year 1000 ascension. And now I'm like, where are we going? That's all the first panel. or the first page.
Well, I think, you know, and just going back a minute to the Magneto thing where it really, after, like you said, after letting, that's when you know it's kind of a good book, because it really makes you think about, what did I just read? And I felt initially like, I'm confused. Like I even told you, Joe, like, I'm really confused. I really don't know what, but then I'm like, no, I mean, it's really Magneto at the end, when you mentioned, when he's basically saying we're gods, he makes it really clear. Like, we have this plan. Charles and I agree with this plan, and Charles will keep doing it as long as humans want us to keep doing this.
Right.
But Magneto's like, I don't care whether you agree with it or not. We're doing it anyway. And I'm going to basically convince Charles to keep doing it, which is what happens, is the negative side of that.
Yeah. Xavier seemed a little colder than I remembered him, which is why I was excited to sort of jump into the powers of X, which, you know, for better or for worse, it just takes the story. And, you know, because I'm thinking of it as, this is a continuation. It is a continuation, but it takes the story into a whole new realm. And it starts with Charles at some kind of fair or something on a nice summer day, and he runs into, and did you recognize this woman right away?
It's Moira McTaggart, right?
Right.
Yeah, but I did not realize that right away.
I didn't either. But it goes from that, and it does bounce between time streams. And this is where Charles just is starting to get a little bit more cold, and he's like, you know, hey, God, you know, Mystique brings him some kind of flash drive or something like that, and she's like, you know, hey, is helping your fellow mutant not reward enough for the great Charles Xavier? He's like, we're building a better mutant world, and everyone who lives in it owes something, right? He's a little bit more transactional in it, and a more realistic about how they have to live. And then it pops forward to the future, which is where I started getting confused, into the 100-year war. Did you get what was going on there? What did you take out of that middle section where it's 100 years in the future, or the 100 years war?
Yeah, I think, real quick sidebar, rewind a minute. The I think it's like 2-panel scene with him and the Fantastic Four.
Oh yeah,
is brilliant. Like, it's just, it really makes me realize how much I really enjoy Fantastic Four, and I hope they don't screw it up in the MCU, which I don't think they will, because I think they have a reverence for them.
Right.
But there's not a lot of dialogue, as you know, but there's a lot of awkward silences, and it's because they catch one of the X-Men, and Cyclops is like, you know, you need to, like, we'll deal with him.
Yeah.
And they're like, nope, we're keeping him. It's a really awkward scene. Saber on that. Team. And they, yeah. And they know. And what's interesting, the twist there is that Franklin Richards is a mutant because of Sue and Reed Richards. And so he kind of drops that, like, hey, Franklin, you can come to Krakoa whenever you want.
Right.
And come to your real family. And it's like, oh my gosh, that's so mean on so many levels. But that's, I just wanted to mention, Joe, I love that little episode there in the comic. It was really well done.
Yeah, I agree. It's nice to see those other characters come in and see how those interactions would go. Because it is, they know each other. They've been around for a long time. And now they're like in a different escalated situation. They're like, we can't let you take Sabretooth. And they're like, well, we're offering all mutants amnesty. And they're like, well, not this one. You can't. Sorry.
Right.
Like, well, we'll figure this out later. You can keep him for now. And Sabretooth is like, hey, this is not the deal, man.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. And you know, they go back to your year 100. It just shows you how you lose all sense of who you are at war. Like, that's really the whole point of that. Of like, I think in that, am I getting the 101 right? Is that one where the humans start breeding mutants?
Yeah.
Or is that further out?
No, it jumps forward in time to that, where it's now, it's like, you're like, man. And after all that, it's still not working out.
Cause
now it's the future. And this was, I think, a fascinating, and I'm sure they did it in X-Men books before, you know, they did with the Sentinels, right?
Yep.
Is now what's happened is the mutants have kept evolving, and the humans are like, well, the only thing we can do is build better machinery. And they've got more advanced machinery that's sort of descended from the Sentinels. And it looks like they're creating like human machine hybrids in some instances. And it's like, now it's humans /AI versus the mutants in the future.
Yeah. And I think that was closer to year 1000, Joe. I think year 100 was really about the mutant breeding program.
Yeah. The timeline is a little confusing. Because they call it the 100-year war, but you're right. It might be farther ahead in the future than 100 years, but they call it the 100-year war. And that's where this is going. And they show where they've been breeding. And, but the mutants have been doing the same thing.
Yeah, no, you're right. It is the year 100 is man machines.
It's kind of cool that they show the gene splicing. And I mean, this is where I'm like, you're not a casual comic book anymore, because people have got to like be paying attention to why I had to read it multiple times. But there's like pages of scientific explanations of how the mutants, and they got Mr. Sinister, and they were intentionally breeding mutants to say, this one has this power, and if we cross it, then they'll have these two powers, and then we can create an Omega level mutant at this thing that's also got these other powers, and they were breeding some for war and some for subterfuge, and like they had like, and the mutants, you're like what are you doing? You're supposed to be like the good guy. They're creating, they're engaging Mr. Sinister, who's an awful villain,
right,
to help.
They're called hounds. Like, I love that term, by the way. The hounds are they're mutants bred by humans to eradicate mutants.
Yeah,
like that's what that was. And it's like, what the heck? And then so if you think of like wartime, it's like behavior modification,
right,
is what it is, because they take away parts of these mutants that they're breeding's personality, so they can't basically have any personality. And so there's a lot of wartime. So that's what I'm saying. The more I thought about it, the more I'm like, he's just reimagining some really interesting old school takes on war and putting it in here, which is, you know, if you pretend that you just want to be left alone and somebody thinks you're different, and you kind of remind them that you are different through the gifts and like all the way back, it's like nothing good comes of that. Like, it's about coexisting with your fellow man and mutant. And that's this says he's not going to do that. And what are the horrible outcomes of that?
Right. Which is really weird. It's a power dynamic, right? Is like, if I'm weaker than them, then they may try and dominate me. But if they know I'm stronger than them, then they'll feel threatened by me. And they'll want to, so it's like, there's no win.
It's the nuclear threat, right? It's right. It's the deterrent. It's like,
how do you get to, if you have
nukes,
balance?
I need to have nukes.
Right. And so the humans are continually escalating their technology to destroy mutants, and mutants are continually, I don't know. It's weird.
It's interesting. You mentioned Krakoa is an island in a place on Earth. Then they literally move to a different, in year 100, they move to a different planet.
Right.
They're like, okay, we'll get further away. And then in year 1000, they're like, we're in a different solar system.
Right.
And it's still not good. Like, there's no physical distance. There's
nowhere to go.
Yeah, there's no physical distance that's far enough to where humans will not want to have some type of nuclear deterrent to mutants. It's like, we're literally in another solar system now.
Right.
Doesn't matter. We're going to cross solar systems to come eradicate you, because we know you're there. Like, your point, just knowing that something else is out there more powerful than you bothers them.
Right. This 100 years war section of the book was, I thought, the most intriguing to me. It was the hardest a little bit to follow. It was the most dense in mythology. They had two characters that I was glad to see. Ilyana Rasputin. Like, hey, Ilyana Rasputin, gotta be descendant of Kitty and Colossus, because has very similar powers, like can turn her body metal like Colossus does, has that soul sword that I think that Kitty's sister wound up wielding at some point. And then that's where they get into the diagram of like her mutant gene, where she's what they call a chimera, which was the first generation of sinister mutants designed to be divergent copies of a singular DNA source with an X gene. And it's like, so she has the powers of teleportation, metamorphosis, intangibility, healing, and something else that I don't know what it is. F-O-F-L-D. I couldn't translate that one, but she's like, she's got the powers of Kitty Pryde and Colossus and that entire like family of mutants,
yep,
all in one. So she's out fighting. And the one that kills me, because I have a comic book from that. And you know, my comic book from those days are spotty. I didn't have the money to get like every issue in a row. I'm like walking down to Dragon's Lair from high school with, you know, $5 in my pocket. So I'm lucky if I get one X-Men copy per month, or you know, two a year. So I'm missing the story, but Nimrod is back. I'm like, Nimrod.
I know. I'm like, that. It's like, how can you be menacing and your name is Nimrod?
Do you know Nimrod from the Marvel comics? Are you familiar with Nimrod?
I am vaguely familiar with Nimrod because I couldn't get my head wrapped around reading any comic with a guy named Nimrod.
I remember reading, I had the issue, and like, he's on the, you open it up and he's like the villain. Like, he's a pink robot.
He's a man machine. He's pink. Pink and gray.
He's a pink robot, and he's like, almost I am Nimrod. you're not intimidating me here, dude.
Oh, yeah.
So Nimrod's back. He's, I guess, a descendant of some Sentinels. But yeah, so they're all still fighting. So, you know, we can come back and cover anything that we sort of missed, but it just sort of wraps with then Ascension 1,000 years in the future, where something else is going on, and you're like, gosh, they've been at it forever, and now mutants are sort of in, they've got their own space at least, but they're keeping relics of like humans almost in sort of like a zoo, and they equate it to how like humans now keep dinosaur bones to remind them of the dangers or that used to roam the planet. So then that's where it ends, right? So if you think back to, let's say, these two issues, was there anything that we missed that you want to cover? Anything that you're like, you know what, I didn't really get that we need to puzzle through? Because it took me a few times through, and I'm not sure I still get it. I didn't get the fact that little tiny floating robot in year 1,000 was what was left of Nimrod after 1,000 years.
Now he's just Nim. Right? He's not a rod anymore. He's just a Nim. I agree with you, Joe. I thought it's very dense, but the most interesting storyline to me was year 100, because it's wartime stuff. So it's all the nasty stuff that you read, and you're like, wow, they're really losing their souls on both sides. But I think in the notes that I took, it was, so you start with Charles saying he's going to do this and he hopes the humans are okay with it. And it's about mutants flourishing. Right.
Yep.
And then you end with, you're in year 1,000 and there are only 10,000 mutants left and they're spread out three different ways.
Right.
And it's like, so that didn't happen.
Yeah.
You didn't flourish. Like, you're right. Literally on a different solar system in three different locations. And the largest population of one of them, I think, is like 7,000 or 8,000 right. people.
Right.
And there are three different factions of mutants. And it's like, meanwhile, the man machines are still hunting you and they're flourishing in terms of civilization, not in terms of like flourish, like positive. So it's like, so you really didn't do what you wanted to do. Like, your dream didn't happen.
Right.
And it's like, why didn't it happen? It's like, because you thought you could be, you know, you listen to more of what Magneto said, which is, we're gods and they need to serve us, and you're just fueling the flames.
I don't know. I maybe
that's my view, but what do you think?
Maybe you're getting me more there, which is because I'm with you. I think we're in agreement that 100 years war piece was most interesting, because I actually thought that the stuff of now where the mutants are creating Krakoa and doing this thing, I was fascinated by that, and I thought it was awesome. And then I was like, but then you get that there's 100 years war, and I'm like, but I know how it turns out. Like, because the reason I was fascinated by it is like, okay, this is a tactic we've never seen them take before. I wonder if it'll work, and you already know it doesn't.
Right. Well, and Joe, like it said, at the end of the 100 year, it was total mutant population during the man machine supremacy.
Right.
So they basically say you basically angered them to the point where they evolved faster.
Right.
And they just eradicated you nearly.
Yeah. I think there's some things left vague from mystery, but like, if we were to like put a button on this one, it's like, what do you think you're going to do now that you've read House of X, Powers of X? Are you going to just be like, okay, that was interesting? You're going to try and keep up with it, you know, read the rest on Comixology? Where do you land on this? Having been an X-Men fan for a long time, IO9, you know, the articles, like, this is a great way to get back into it. It's a new age of X-Men you got to pay attention to. How much attention do you think you're going to pay to it? Are you even going to finish this graphic novel, House of X, Powers of X?
Yeah, that's a good question. it's probably a solid maybe for me. I think us talking through it, I kind of like what I got already. So if there's more yep. in there later in the book, I might read it. Okay. As far as getting into it, you know, one of your original questions.
Yeah,
I think it is. No, I think you can't. I mean, if you're prepared to really get into it, I mean, there's some dense topics, but like I said, what I liked about the X-Men in the 80s, it's still in there.
Yeah.
Like a lot of those elements are still in there. So if people want a more dense, thoughtful topic, which really is what the X-Men is about. I mean, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man is one thing, but X-Men and, you know, racism and being different, and like, that's a whole nother topic altogether. It's really dense around that. And I think, yeah, it is easy is probably not the right phrase. It's fun and engaging, but not easy to get into.
Right. No, I like that. I like that diagnosis of it, because I think that that puts a good summary to it, which is, if you're willing to put the time into it, it'll probably pay off for you, because it does. If you like the X-Men before and you like the themes of it, you'll like it. If what you liked about the X-Men was I could pick up a book, flip through it in 15 minutes and see Nightcrawler swing around on the mast of a pirate ship and sword fight people, no, that's not what you're in for here.
That is so true.
But I think that's great. So thanks for reading it with me, Mark. I will definitely read the rest of this, just because I'm intrigued by the premise, and I got to get through it. I looked at the list of books I would have to continue reading to get caught up with where we are, and it might be more time. This House of X, Powers of X, the entire storyline that you get through where the Jonathan Hickman wrote is called The Dawn of X, apparently. And it's because then it sets up the dawn of the new X-Men universe. So what's going on today? It's 127 issues. Like, oh, I don't know, but I'll definitely get through this and then we'll see where we go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for reading this with me, Mark. This was a lot of fun. I'll catch you up and let you know if you should keep with it or whether I'll just fill in the blanks for you. We're going to take a quick break. Jeff is going to give everybody the picks of the week, the comics we're recommending. And then we'll be back, Mark, to talk about a little bit about what's next and say goodbye.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Superman service at bizarro prices. And now, it's time for the tremendous trio of treasures. Three new comics that we recommend for all of our loyal listeners. First, The Wrong Earth, Trapped on Teen Planet, number one. Get excited for the first of five unique one-shots, building and expanding on the world of a Casual Comics favorite, The Wrong Earth. Brought to you by some of the biggest names in comics. Superstar writer Gail Simone contributes an extra-long story as grim and gritty vigilante Dragonfly is whisked to an alternate earth of teenagers, malt shops, love triangles, and school dances. Will this innocent world soften him, or will his violent methods poison it? Your guess is as good as mine, but the Casual Comics crew cannot wait to find out. Then, One Star Squadron, number four. Everyone must go. Under pressure from the board, Red Tornado is forced to fire some of his hero colleagues so the company can stay afloat. First on the chopping block, Power Girl. Will her self-help Bible by Maxwell Lord assure her survival? Or is she as doomed as Krypton once was? Finally, Strange, number one. A new Sorcerer Supreme rises. Doctor Strange is dead, and a new Sorcerer Supreme has taken the title. Or should we say sorceress? Haunted by her recently returned memories, Clea longs to bring Stephen Strange back from the dead. But when a mysterious group attacks the magical realm, Clea must rise to the duties of Sorcerer Supreme, for she is now the sole protector of Earth against magical threats. Don't miss the twists and turns as Jed McKay continues the story from Death of Doctor Strange. And that's your Casual Comics Cast tremendous trio of treasures for this episode. Pick them up wherever fine comic books are sold today.
All right. Wow. Coming up the home stretch.
Let's do it.
All right. So thanks for sticking with us, everybody. Those were the comic book picks of the week. Mark, we're recommending Wrong Earth, Trapped on Teen Planet, number one, One Star Squadron, number four, which, you know, we're just loving that book right now. It's so fun, written by Mark Russell. And then Strange, number one, ties into Death of Doctor Strange, which we reviewed on an earlier podcast. We reviewed Death of Doctor Strange, which ends with, spoiler alert, Doctor Strange being dead and Clea taking over as Sorcerer Supreme. So I'm super excited about those books. Any of those intriguing to you at all?
I think I've always been a a Doctor Strange fan, so I think that I picked that last one first.
All right.
All sound like good ones, though.
Strange number one. We'll see how it goes with Clea taking over. So that was a lot to get through. A lot of heavy topics there with X-Men. We made it, though. We made it through. And I think we're going to come back soon. It's March 2nd as we're recording this today with some casual comics craziness. It's not like March Madness. It's casual comics craziness. A bracket style discussion with one winner. And I'm still trying to figure out what to pit against each other. What are your thoughts? Like best comic series, best hero, best villain. What do you think if we're going to do a bracket style? What should be the theme of it?
Did we do, well, you could do a lot of different things. Maybe you could do maybe costumes.
Ooh.
You do best costumes. So you could like have pit, you know, Spider-Man's red and blues versus Spider-Man's black.
Yeah.
For example. But I guess a lot of people don't have a bunch of different costumes. Well, they kind of do, I suppose.
We could do most iconic costume.
You could do, you know, just straight up, you know, power cage match thing. Like who would win in a fight?
Yeah.
That's always classic.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, it would be interesting because I know that on Quora.com, when I read some of those questions on Marvel, it's like, who would win in a fight?
Yeah.
Like Thor or Beta Ray Bill. It's like, it's kind of the same thing.
That way lies madness, my friend. Obviously, Hulk would beat Thor in a fight. Well, except these five times for Thor beat Hulk in a fight. Exactly. All right. Best 7 out of 10.
So, yes. You should do that. Best series. I don't know. That's interesting.
I March Madness is a one and done. It's not like a 6-game series or 7-game series.
Yeah. Yeah. You can do what you could do. Like you said, best storyline. You could put together something like,
What if we did most iconic storyline?
Yeah. That'd be kind of interesting.
I think we'll just do like a 16. We won't go all the way to 64.
I don't want to do 127 issues. Yeah. Interesting storyline would be good.
Okay.
Best villains. No, that's not good. Cause Marvel doesn't have the best villains. DC has better villains.
Do we want to keep it? Like if it was the best heroes or best villains, you want to keep it to one publisher or like mix them Marvel and DC together?
Well, so that'd be kind of neat to mix them, even though you're not supposed to, but that'd be very anti Marvel or DC, but I kind of like that. Who would win in a fight?
Okay.
Darkseid or Hulk.
Okay. Well, we'll think about it. You think about it. Maybe we'll put some ideas out there on the casualcomicsguy.com blog and let people vote on which is the best idea. We're going to be back with our recap of the Batman in the next episode, and we will kick off casual comics craziness and do some bracket style busting.
Sweet. Game on.
Game on, bro. Flame on.
Flame on, game on.
Ooh, it should be best Ooh. Catchphrase.
Best catchphrase. It's clobbering time.
Clobbering time. All right, Mark. Well, thanks for getting through X-Men with me. I'm really glad that we got to read that and get through that because I'm, like I said, I'm excited to read the rest of it. And I wouldn't have done it without you, buddy. So thanks a lot.
Likewise, Joe. It was good. Thank you for recommending it.
All right. Well, we will talk to everybody again soon. Cheers, everybody.
See ya.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter at Casual Comics Guy, at our blog, casualcomicsguy.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.